Hey, welcome to Lighthouse Podcast, Tom in the hot seat today. I'm joined by James Routledge.
Hello.
Special guest, we're going to be doing another edition of Startup Stories, where we chat to people who've been running startup businesses, learn about their history, learn what they're up to in the past, learn what they're up to now. To start off, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself, how you first got involved in the startup world?
Cool. So I first got involved in startups during my second year at university, University of Sheffield. I was studying history and politics, which had absolutely no relevance to anything that I'm doing now. Basically, me and a few friends just got interested in technology and apps. I think we watched The Social Network and then started getting excited about what was sort of possible. And really, it all happened quite quickly, to be honest. In my case, you know, I met a friend who just really sort of sparked, you know, that sort of entrepreneurial flame within me, I suppose. And then we met a couple of guys from the computer science department, and we just started sort of putting some ideas together. Nice. So the first thing, I mean, we had an idea for a nightclub ticketing app called Nightfinder, which seems to be the idea that everyone has at uni because it's the only problem that you face.
We've heard that one before.
Yeah, yeah. Where to go on nights out, basically, is the only problem that you actually
You're solving a problem, right?
So. So we did that a little bit, but we never got anything off the ground with that. And then we stumbled into MatchChat, which actually ended up being my first business, which started off as a place where students could go to keep up to date with the varsity scores from when the two universities were playing each other at sport. Okay. And we basically hacked something together that looked absolutely awful, that pulled in all the scores from all the varsity matches, but then pulled in all the social feed about the banter that was going on between the students. Nice. And that was it, really. That was the first, the very first sort of toe in the water into you know, anything product or startup related.
Nice. So, how did that go when you first did it? I mean, you must have learned quite a lot quite quickly. And you don't have a background in tech.
To be honest, it was just fun at the start. At university, we were just really messing around. And then it started to get a little bit more serious when we obviously got very excited thinking that we could turn it into a business. And at that point, we just started meeting as many people as possible who were loosely related to startups in some way. And obviously Sheffield's a lot smaller than London. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't too difficult to meet the startup people in a very short space of time. So we met all the startup people in Sheffield who sort of were involved in like early stage tech businesses. And then we came down to London to a couple of times, came to Google Campus, and it was like, it's kind of, the way I describe it is like going down the rabbit hole, you know, like you've got this idea for something and then you talk to like your friends or your family about it, but they won't be that interested.
Yeah.
Whereas then you start to meet like-minded people and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And there's people who are as wired as I am or who think like I do. And it's really quite sort of invigorating at the time.
Yeah, yeah. Also maybe difficult to control that kind of where you're going to end up, and it must kind of run out of control a little bit.
Yeah, it's just like, I think the first few months we were just like crazed. We were just like, we were in the library till like 2:30 in the morning. I honestly do not know what we were doing. We were definitely wasting our time, but you just have it. It was so new to us at that time. And it's not like I was any of us were massively stimulated by our degrees. So we were really just looking for anything new to do. So it was pretty cool. And the first few months were just exciting. We thought we were like, you know, we thought we were like Mark Zuckerberg, when in reality we were doing absolutely nothing. The first few months are always a bit like that, I imagine.
Yeah, I think that's a common story, especially the first time you're doing it. You get super excited by it and then see where it goes and who knows where you end up. So, I mean, what happened with that eventually?
Well, long story, but basically, whilst at university, like I said, we started to meet everybody, and then we decided to stay in Sheffield over the summer to just carry on working on the product. And during that time, we'd been meeting lots of different people, and we'd started to get people advise us to go onto an accelerator program.
Okay.
You know, I was only 21 at the time. Co-founders were all similar age. We had absolutely no experience and we didn't really know what we were doing in many ways. Mm-hmm. So an accelerator seemed like a good fit, obviously a bit of cash to keep us going, and a big network and a big group of people around us which could sort of channel that young enthusiasm that we had. So fortunately we got onto the first accelerator we applied to, well, the only accelerator we applied to, which was Ignite 100 based up in Newcastle. Which was an incredible, absolutely amazing experience. For the first time we were around people like I said, who were just the same as us, you know, 9 other teams, some really quite experienced people, people who'd worked at Microsoft, Google, mm-hmm. had startups in the past that had been fairly successful, people that were making money, which was amazing to us.
Always nice.
Yeah, and we got 15 grand in the bank. Like, you know, we'd never seen that much money ever. Yeah. So, so that was amazing. That was the next step. And then from there, products started to change. We started to raise more money, and it really started to, oh, and didn't go out of control, but then we were sort of really down the rabbit hole at that point.
Yeah, yeah. So what was your experience of going through the accelerator? What was what did you learn from that? How did it kind of change the way you look at things? And
it was, I mean, it's one of the most intense periods of my life, mm-hmm. that's for sure. It's you know, 13 weeks, about 3 months of really quite hard work, basically, mm-hmm. and quite mentally challenging, because, you know, you're getting different things thrown at you each day. You're always challenged by people who you think may be smarter than you or have more experience than you on product, on strategy, on your business model, on fundraising, on all sorts of things. So, I mean, for us, our product changed quite significantly. We pivoted. Obviously, the stresses amongst the team, you know, we had a couple of fallouts. But as a learning experience, it was, I mean, I learned more in that 3 months than I had in probably the last 5 years of my academic life, pretty much, in terms of like practical experience that I could take away with me.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is you get a lot of stuff thrown directly at you and you've got to suck it all in, basically.
You do, yeah. I think one big thing you learn is how to have an effective filter, mm-hmm. and take the advice which helps you get towards your goal and throw away the bad advice, because you get a lot of bad advice.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily bad advice. I suppose that's subjective, but it's advice that isn't right for you, mm-hmm. and you need to be the one who makes that call, basically.
Yeah, cool. So after that, you went on and things got bigger and better. So where did you end
up? Well, yeah, it depends how you...
Maybe not.
At the time, it felt bigger, but in hindsight, it wasn't necessarily better. I mean, you got to remember, I mean, we're 21 and we've been thrown into this world which is all about fundraising and unicorns and, mm-hmm. and fast growth and less about actually building something that people wanted.
Yeah, yeah. Which is really important.
Which is the only thing, really. Yeah. We were everyone was besotted with raising money.
Yeah.
And that was all that even mattered to us, really. The conversation was, how much are you raising? What valuation? When are you raising? How's fundraising going? How much have you raised? You know, it was really, that was all it was about. It was a complete, it still is to some extent, I think, like a complete fundraising frenzy. So we ended up raising a seed round. Well, we raised a small convertible loan at the end of the program and then raised a seed round of 265K, mm-hmm. which was great, obviously, which again was an incredible learning experience. Raising that round allowed us to hire a few more people. But in all honesty, at that point, we did not have product market fit, and we didn't even have a product that was solving a problem, to be honest with you. We had a bit of traction, but it was all... It's a lot of vanity metrics and a lot of fluff and a nice pitch deck.
Yep.
We really raised that money on the strength of the team, and not to blow my own trumpet, but you know, I was good at fundraising, which isn't that good a skill, to be honest. So we raised that money, grew the team out a little bit, and grew, but the growth was superficial, really. We never had a product which really solved the problem or really added any value to a user.
How did you kind of approach trying to find that product market fit, or was that not even a consideration while you're going through it?
I mean what's sort of funny and I suppose scary is that it goes right back to the very start and the idea and the mm-hmm. ideation, because we never set out to build that business because we saw a problem that needed to be solved, or we had a certain vision for how the world should look, which I know is very cliche and cheesy, but mm-hmm. that is how it works. We started that business essentially for lack of a better idea.
Right.
Because none of us wanted to go on grad schemes, and we were bored at university and we wanted to play around and try something new. So we never had this like vision that was guiding us that gave us a basis to make decisions. We were just throwing stuff at the wall and seeing what stuck, basically.
Yeah.
So every time we pivoted, it was, you know, if we had a really smart mentor say, oh, why don't you try this? We would give it a go. We wouldn't say, no, we believe this about how our product should be or how this business should be. so we're going to iterate in this direction.
Yeah.
Or our customers are saying this to us, so we're going to do that. Or we think to help person X solve this problem, we will do Y. It was all very, you know, we really went from side to side.
Got it.
Just because we didn't have that mission that we were on, yeah, or that problem that we were solving.
You didn't end up with that clear direction and a real direction path to work through.
No direction whatsoever.
Got it.
Which is crazy. Well, that comes from the very start, is the point I'm trying to make. We kept trying to stick it on the end.
Yeah.
So we had this team and we had money in the bank, and then we were like, right, let's find it. Like, then let's get a problem and a vision and stick it on. But it's got to come from the start.
Of course, yeah.
Or else you can't do it. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. So where next? Now Native is the next thing up, or that came on after that?
Yeah, so to go into product a little bit, basically what had happened was we'd pivoted MatchChat to what was essentially a suite of engagement products for sports websites. So if you owned a sports website, you would install various different MatchChat products, which were like commenting plugins, sharing widgets, recommended articles, all trying to keep users on the site for longer.
Got it.
And we grew to pretty serious scale. You know, that's what I was mentioning before about vanity metrics. Mm-hmm. We had 130 different websites using our products. We were collectively across that network doing 50 million page views a month.
Well, not bad.
Which is pretty impressive stuff. But that was sugarcoating the fact that underneath that it was pretty hollow.
Yeah.
So the next obvious sort of change in direction was to become a more broad publisher product for websites, which was much more around advertising and ad tech, basically. Mm-hmm. So Now Native was the sort of next evolution of that. And that's when the business became much more about mobile advertising and native advertising.
Got it.
We took that audience and we essentially tried to monetize it, mm-hmm, and failed.
Right, okay. why did you fail? What were the problems?
We just couldn't. I mean, all of our traffic was mobile.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't make any, not just we, like nobody can now.
Yeah.
Like publishers cannot make money from their, the only people who can make money from mobile advertising is Facebook, pretty mm-hmm much. And we really struggled. So that was where Now Native then was like, well, the next problem we'll have a go at solving is to try and help publishers make money on mobile. So then our products became much more about new advertising formats. So we would have like full page advertising formats, new native advertising formats. But again, that's just an example of no clear direction, no clear vision. We've gone from solving one problem to solving another problem, you know, and suddenly from something that started out as a site to help student follow their university sports team has ended up as an mobile advertising technology company.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's insane, you know, we literally went full circle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Quite a change over time, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, Now Native came to an end at some point. So what were the reasons behind that, and what did you do afterwards?
Yeah, so we were in a really unique situation, actually, that I've not come across many startups like us that they've actually gone down the same routes. Most startups shut down because they run out of money,
yep,
pretty much. Whereas with us, actually, we had plenty of cash in the bank. We actually raised another seed round. So we raised another bridge round of about 250K in December 2014. And this is when we were very much Now Native, and we basically said to ourselves, the team sat down and we said, right, this is pretty much our last chance. We're not going to raise any more money. The next money we have to potentially raise would have to be a much bigger round, mm-hmm, a Series A, basically, or we get to a position of profitability and we become sustainable. So it really felt like we were starting again at that point a little bit. And we'd got this new, what we thought, direction around helping publishers make money on mobile was our sort of big thing. So that was sort of the start of 2015. So pretty much sort of this time, well, not this, yeah, not far, about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically said to ourselves, right, we're going to really like hit it hard for 6 months. Like, we'll graft, we're going to roll out products as fast as we can. We'll really get in market, speak to as many publishers as possible, and really work our socks off and try and move the needle.
Yeah, yeah.
And we said, if the needle doesn't move, then we've got a problem. Like, this, obviously, we've obviously not onto anything here, because we're going to really give it a go. So, I mean, and we did that. I mean, I burnt myself. Like, we all burnt ourselves out for,
sounds like it,
for
yeah,
6 months. You know, yeah, we were working, we would work all day, you know, maybe go to the gym and then work all evening. Like, yeah, it was pretty intense. And basically what happened was, it got to about June last year, June 2015, and nothing had moved.
Right.
We tried everything, you know, we'd We'd spoken to every big media owner in London, Guardian, Financial Times, Telegraph, BuzzFeed, Mashable, like you name it, we'd met them and we'd spoken to them about the problems and our solutions. And we just had no wins, really. So what happened was we went on a bit of an away day, just like clear our heads, talk about stuff, which was actually the first time we'd ever done that as well.
How many of you were involved at the end?
There was only four of us at that point. We'd gone from like 8 to 4. Mm-hmm. And we went on this away day, which was actually the only time, one of the only times we really got away together as a team and just generally just spoke about stuff, which is something I wish we'd done much more of.
Always good to have people speaking, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Just get out of the office, talk about how things are really going, just get yourself in a new environment and just brainstorm. But we used to have this stupid, like, work hard startup mentality, which was like, oh no, because if we're doing that, we're not selling. When in reality, you've got nothing to sell or build anyway, because you're not selling or building the right thing. So we finally do this, like, step back and reflect. And actually, it was at that point we decided to turn off a few of our products and shut them down and focus a little bit more. And what was a very telltale sign is that, you know, we turn off some of these products and no one actually cares.
Yeah.
So they're
obviously... Well, you always assume that everything's super important to everyone. But
exactly.
Actually,
and
they
didn't,
focus is really
powerful. They didn't even notice.
Yeah, right.
Which really shows how invaluable...
Yeah,
invaluable. Yeah. No, not invaluable.
Not invaluable.
Not invaluable. These products were. And then it became quite clear to me as the sort of CEO that we were just going nowhere, really. When we got back from that trip, we sort of all sat down and I remember it just clicked in my head one day and I looked at the team. I just said, do you like advertising, to each person? So I was like, do you like advertising? No. Do you? No. Do you? Kind of. And I just thought, well, what on earth are we doing?
Yeah, of course.
Now, why,
if there's no
what
passion
am
behind
I wasting
it?
My, like, it's obscene that we all get into startups because we're striving for this amazing life of work-life balance or, you know, freedom at work and to love what you do. And, you know, we've all watched the Steve Jobs Stanford commencement speech and all that. And then actually we'd ended up working on something that we weren't even passionate about. Yeah. And it was quite twisted in a way, actually.
It's not the startup dream, is it?
It's not the startup dream, but a lot of people are actually living that, which is quite scary. And it just clicked in my head. I just thought, well, we're wasting our time then. So it all moved quite quickly after that, actually. We pretty much went to see our investors immediately and just told them the whole situation and just said, look, we're packing it in. We don't want to do this. It was never going to be a business that anyone wanted. I mean, we were actually not far off becoming break even because of the ads we were serving, but it was never going to be a big business. It was not anything that anyone wanted. So we then went through this process of pretty much selling off our assets to one of our biggest customers. And because we still had cash in the bank, we were in a bit of a weird situation where, like, we still had a lot of money in the bank. You know, we could have gone for another 15 months.
Wow.
So we actually sold off those assets and then pretty much gave the cash back.
Wow.
So
that is a very rare situation, huh?
Very, yeah, really. It's like, it's what's called like a voluntary liquidation,
right,
as opposed to an involuntary one.
Yeah.
Which is what most people go through.
Yeah, cool. So what happened directly after this liquidation happened?
Well, I mean, the first thing is the liquidation doesn't happen very quickly.
No, I imagine, yeah.
It was a very, very, very painful process.
Right.
So to put it into perspective, I mean, that decision was made in June. June the 12th was when we officially sort of ceased trading, and we gave everyone then served notice on staff and everything. But the company was not officially liquidated until December the 18th.
Right.
So that's 6 months.
Oh my God, yeah.
Of just paperwork, admin, legal stuff, talking to shareholders, trying to work out the IP sale, put the assets together, do all the accounts. You know, it was just an absolute nightmare. It was without a doubt the hardest and just most painful thing I've ever done. People talk about failure and shutting down companies all the time, quite blasé about it. And what people don't realise is that when you have it, because Matchstart and Nonative was a failure. Whether it relatively in terms of the learning that I had and as an individual, you could class it as a success. But if purely investment raised, what we were set up to do, it was a complete and utter failure.
Yeah.
Now, people rightly, I think, champion failure, and I think that's good, because I do believe that for like the ecosystem in general, hopefully what I will achieve later in my life and what my other co-founders will achieve will sort of repay that back in the longer term. But as a one-off, much that was a failure.
Yeah.
And when you're going through that liquidation and you're putting your affairs in order and you're shutting down, at every point, you know, when you're maybe preparing a document or writing an email or having a difficult conversation, you are reminded of why you failed and the mistakes that you made.
Wow.
So it's like a knife twisting in your back, basically. Yeah, yeah. So let's say, hypothetically, I'm being diplomatic here, one of the reasons that I, as a founder, may have thought that we failed is because we got some of the wrong advisors involved in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I am then shutting down, I have to have a conversation with said advisors. And it reminds me during that conversation of, for God's sake, James, that was your mistake. Why did you get that person involved?
It just
hurts more and more and more.
Holding
each
a mirror
time.
Up to you all the time just to show you what you've done wrong.
Exactly. And you're beating yourself up.
Yeah.
And it's really like a bereavement. Honestly, that's the only way, maybe not a bereavement or a big breakup. It's as if you're going through a divorce with you.
Well, you've put so much effort into something anyway. So like to then go through that and see it slipping away, and you know, you said you might not be super into it at the end, but all that time you've put into building these products up and building these companies up, that's not a good thing to go through at all.
No, it's your life in many ways as well, and it's your identity as well.
Mm.
So for however long previously, that's 3 years in my case, I'm James the founder of.
Yeah.
So
of course, yeah.
When what I'm the founder of dies, like a little bit of me dies as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And because that's a failure, I feel like a failure as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real, you know, people say business isn't personal, which is complete rubbish.
No, it's not true.
It 100% is. You know, you take any failure, any business failure as a personal failure because it's all come out of your head.
Of course, yeah.
So extremely difficult time. I wouldn't wish it upon anyone at all.
I feel for you.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you definitely come out a bit stronger.
Yeah. Well, presumably, the takeouts from that, how much you've learned over that time makes you open to lots more stuff in the future. I mean, like, you know, would you do it all again?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I even, you know, in a funny way, even when I was going through the liquidation, I knew I was going to do another one at some point.
But maybe just not quite now.
But just not straight away.
Yeah.
Honestly, I draw the analogy between a business and a relationship so many times, because anyone who's suffered heartbreak or, you know, been dumped or split up with their girlfriend or their partner or anything, it's very, very similar.
Yeah.
You know, you might be in denial for a little bit. You might run away. You might escape.
Yeah.
You might have a rebound. Like, there's really so many things.
Yeah,
I mean, if I look at what happened to me, I basically spent a month going out drinking.
Yep.
Which is what a lot of people do when they have a breakup.
Classic
and just running away, you know, just ignoring a lot of stuff. I then went to Bali for a month.
Mm-hmm.
Again, escapism. I was a complete like cabbage. It was numb to everything. I just didn't want to speak to anyone about anything. I just wanted to ride mopeds and drink like cheap lager on the beach sort of thing.
Doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, which was all right actually. And yeah, it's, you know, it is very, you go through all those different stages, I think, until eventually, and then you never truly get over it, I don't think, but it definitely gets a little bit easier.
Cool. So, I mean, what happened then? How did you build yourself up again? And what was the next thing that you moved on to?
I think when you've started a business, you have taken a big risk in any way. Some take more risk than others, but you've put yourself out there a lot, and usually you've also met a lot of people as well along
the
way.
Yeah.
And I found that because whilst I'd spent the 3 years of doing MatchChat, I'd met so many different people and I'd made so many friends. And whilst we'd never actually built anything of real value, we'd always presented ourselves and we actually had quite a good reputation as a team and as people.
Yeah.
And that really paid off for me in the end. I mean, I was quite overwhelmed with how supportive people were when I told them that we were shutting down and stuff. I had a lot of friends who would, you know, said, look, come and work for me for a little bit.
Cool.
Or when you have decided what you want to do, let me know and I'll help you out. And I was really, I had a lot of my network started to give back. You know, you've put yourself out there and you've taken that risk and it sort of does come back around for you. I found anyway, as long as I think you've invested in that, in those relationships.
I mean, the amount of people you would have met over that time and built up that network and the kind of skills you would have got as well from going from that kind of green early stage up until when you were running this company. And
yeah, exactly. You meet a lot of people see you progress.
Mm.
So that was really good for me. And basically, I ended up getting offered offered a job from a guy called Doug Scott, who's a very prolific angel investor in the UK, mm-hmm. to help manage his angel syndicate.
Got it.
Which was an incredible, absolutely incredible role. I mean, a real sort of dream job for anyone in startups. It was basically a job of meeting a load of startups and a load of angel investors, mm-hmm. and helping people raise money. It cool. was, you know, it was an incredible role.
And that's with potential, right?
Yeah, with potential VC, cool. yeah. So that was an awesome next step for me. You know, one of the things that I was very good at was fundraising, rightly or wrongly. But I also, because of the nature of Matchchat and the money we'd raised, I also had quite strong views on how seed funding should be, mm-hmm. you know, should be done in the UK. So that was a great, you know, put me in a great place to go there.
And so what were you doing in these companies? Like, you were mentoring them to raise money, or?
We were an angel syndicate, which invested around, well, we are, Potential VC is an angel syndicate, which invested around 150K into startups via their network of angels, pretty much.
Got
so
it.
I was very much involved on the deal execution side. So we would have a team who go out, deal source, meet loads of startups, mentor them, help them. And then once we picked the one that we might invest in, mm-hmm. I would agree the deal, do the terms, and sort of make the deal happen.
Got it. So you were there for a while, but now you're on to a new thing, or?
Yes, I was there for 6 months, uh-huh. from September to, I mean, last day was on Friday. So
okay, wow. yeah. So brand new
was,
start,
yeah, that was my last day. So this is day two of me being on my own again.
Wow, okay.
But it was an absolutely incredible experience having the opportunity at such an early age to sort of be on the other side of the table, as it were, was a real eye-opener.
What did you learn from having that other side of the story?
Good question. I mean, I was always very open with Doug, my boss, and with everyone there, that I was never going to be a VC for the rest mm-hmm. of my life. You know, that was always quite clear. But I was very excited about setting up their model and getting it up and running, which I'd like to think that I played a big part in. And what I learned, I suppose, venture capital is an interesting one, and so is angel investing as well, because on the face of it, the role I had sounded absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, meet loads of startups, all these people with new ideas, you know, loads of passionate entrepreneurs who are willing to change the world, and you invest in them and they've got a chance to do it. It's amazing. However, what I quickly realized was that to make any money, angel investing in particular, or investing at such an early stage, you have to invest in 100 startups.
Yeah, of course.
It's the only way.
Yeah.
And then one might make it, and that will return the loss of the 99,
yeah.
and
yeah.
you'll make a profit.
Yeah.
So it sort of gets to the point where you meet an amazing founder, and it's a bit sad in a way, because you're thinking, well, you know, you're just one of the 100.
Yeah.
And it becomes very much a numbers game.
Yeah.
And it becomes quite transactional. So really then the question becomes, well, what price is it? What's the valuation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's that. And because you have to be so black and white, and you have to detach yourself so much, and you have to become unemotional and just purely rational. And
it takes the excitement away from
it. It did for me. Yeah. It's just, so I just, that wasn't my personality.
Yeah, of course.
I'm a very emotional person.
Yeah.
I get attached. I want to get attached to these ideas and to these people in particular. So I wouldn't call it ruthless or cutthroat. That's the wrong word, but it's for a certain type of personality, I think. Mm-hmm. And you have to be a real purist with real strong values and real strong morals to stick it out.
Got it.
And actually do well in it in the end.
Yeah, I can see you. So sounds like that wasn't destined forever.
No.
But now you're on to day two of something new. So
yeah.
What's that? You know, what's your plan? Tell us all about it.
Cool. So during Potential, I obviously had a lot of license to sort of write and work on, you know, I suppose side projects really. And one of the things that I became passionate about was started writing on mental health in startups.
Mm-hmm.
During my own, as you can probably tell, during my own sort of journey shutting down Matchchat and now Native, I was in like quite a dark place really. I mean, mm-hmm. In the 6 months during that liquidation, I had quite severe anxiety. I was having panic attacks. I'd just completely burnt myself out, and it took me a very long time to sort of accept that and start to talk about it to anyone, which is the same for most people.
Yeah.
And when I did start talking to people about it, I was amazed by how many people were agreeing with everything I was saying, and then also saying, oh yeah, I've also struggled with that. And it was, you know, these were always conversations that were sort of behind closed doors and, and you know, maybe over WhatsApp or just Facebook Messenger or something. And I just thought, this is crazy. Pretty much every founder I know has been through some form of struggle or has been in some sort of dark place, really.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it is so hard and it's such an isolating...
Well, it's such a high-pressure environment with all loads of stuff on your shoulders and so many different things you've got to deal with.
Exactly, and you feel like you have no one to talk to, and you feel like you shouldn't talk to anyone. You feel like you should never show any weakness.
Yeah.
You don't want to be judged. You know, you feel like you've got to be this rock and this, especially if you're the CEO, you've really got to take it all on and be this complete, like, no vulnerability, just really strong character. So I just started, at first, I started talking about my own issues to friends and family and other people and other founder friends. And I realized that these problems are probably much more prevalent than I knew anyway. And then basically it was about 2 months ago from now, I wrote a post on Medium called Mental Health in Startups, which was really quite a raw, honest piece about my own experience and why I think these problems occur within the startup environment.
Yep.
And as soon as I clicked publish on that piece, it literally went crazy. You know, I had 15,000 views in 3 days, and what was more crazy was that I got about 300 emails personally. From like random people.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
sharing experiences with you or...
Yeah, and those emails, it wasn't just the fact that they were, you know, random as emailing you is sort of overwhelming, but it was like the length and the passion within those emails which really struck me. You know, they weren't 5 sentences long. They were monologues of people really saying, hi, James, thank you so much for writing this post. Here's my story. And then it was just like, boom, stream of consciousness. And that, when I did that and I felt that pull from people and that emotion, I was just like, I just cannot not do this. Yeah, I can't stop, basically, is how I felt. I felt like I really needed to keep championing the subject and keep talking about it. So I followed up with a few more posts and kept writing about it and kept talking about it to people, and ended up in the position I am now, where I was always thinking about, what, you know, is there a business here? Like, is there, these problems are obviously so big, is there a business which sort of solves these problems? And the problems basically are, you know, there's a huge stigma around mental health in general. People, it's taboo to talk about it. People feel like they can't talk about it. There's an inherent fear of being judged or showing weakness. And because of that, there is just a very clear and distinct lack of understanding and awareness about what the solutions are.
Yeah, completely.
So most people do not have, you know, a trusted and impartial support network that they can talk to. Things like therapists and counsellors got their own stigma attached.
Yeah, I know people who've been through that kind of thing, and to even convince people that that's something that's worth doing, and there isn't this kind of judgment.
It's not something that you would tell someone about, is
no,
it?
No, really.
If you've gone to therapy, you know, you're not gonna post on your Facebook and check in at the therapist's office and say, you know, just been for a session with the counsellor.
Yeah.
However, if I go to the gym at 6 a.m, you know, there'll be people who do a selfie with their top off saying, I've just got a big chest workout.
Yeah.
And it was that analogy, actually, between mental and physical health, which was sort of really keeping me awake at night. And I just kept thinking about it, because the perception around physical health is so positive now. You know, people, if you're not into your physical health, it's almost not cool.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's so cool now to do CrossFit, Pilates, yoga, cave training, or, you know, be a member at Gymbox.
Definitely. It's changed a lot.
It's changed massively.
We do yoga in the office every Monday, so...
I mean, 10 years ago, you would never have done that. You know, that wouldn't even be 5 years ago. Even.
Yeah.
And I was drawing the analogy to mental health, where the perceptions around mental health, you know, darkness, loneliness, sadness, weakness, depression, anxiety. No one ever talks about having good mental health. No one talks about, you know, I meditated for 10 minutes this morning, I'm feeling so present and aware. Like, no one would ever say that. And I just kept thinking, you know, why is that a thing? I don't see why that shouldn't be a thing. So my mission with all of this really is to sort of make mental health cool.
Mm-hmm.
As sort of odd as that may sound, but, you know, make it something that people are open to talk about, and it's as mainstream and as cool as your physical health.
Yeah, I think, and a lot of people don't realise that loads of people have these issues.
Exactly.
And it's not just them, and that's one of the key blockers for people.
It is, yeah. So as I've started to think about this like high level distinction between mental and physical health. I was only really thinking of it from like a high level perspective, and I then started to think of it in like in a product way. Mm-hmm. So obviously for your physical health, you know, the products are gyms, fitness classes, sports clubs, running clubs, mm-hmm. all that sort of stuff, home workouts even in some cases.
Or things that get you to the gym.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or you might even, and then on top of that, we've had like, you've got now like apps like Strava, MyFitnessPal, and that's all come on top of this, mm-hmm. and this craze, I suppose. And I was just had this big picture of thinking of, you know, why isn't there a mental health gym? Like, why isn't there a place that you can go that, you know, maybe has like a meditation room, like drawing, reading, writing rooms. Mm-hmm. You've got like a suite of classes on. You maybe have like an in-house coach or counselor that you can go and see.
Got it.
And in general, it might just be a chilled out environment that you can go to and just turn your phone off and, mm-hmm. and switch off. Obviously, that's very big picture. And if your goal is to make mental health cool, there's nothing better I don't think you can do than actually put a mental health gym on the high street. Like, that's pretty, as a goal, I think that's pretty big.
Yeah.
But obviously, I've been schooled in the whole lean startup methodology.
Nice.
I know not to like go out and
buy a bunch of places.
Yeah, but raise $20 million in VC and buy a gym or something. So my first product is essentially to help people in startups ride that sort of emotional roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing that with a series of mental health workshops. So I'm actually doing the first one on Wednesday next week, and it's called Building Resilience.
Cool.
So it's a session, it's a class of 8 people led by a trained facilitator who's a therapist who's worked with entrepreneurs for the last sort of 10 years. And the format will very much be like an arena where you can bring up those challenges and those struggles that you're facing that you would never usually talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, co-founder conflicts, struggles with work-life balance, struggles with your girlfriend that you're not seeing her enough, the fact that you've got no idea what you're doing and you feel like an imposter. You know, you really sort of an arena where you can work through those challenges.
I mean, and those feelings are felt across all different people and not just startups and all that, so it can expand quite easy, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the things that I hope that people will get out of it are, one, I suppose just getting those feelings off your chest is always feels good. Secondly, a sanity check, like you said, I'm not alone. Yeah. Like the person opposite me feels exactly the same. That kind of makes me feel more normal.
Yeah.
And then most importantly, I really want it to be about that sort of community feel of people helping each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going through a certain challenge and there's 2 people in that room who've been there before, that'll be amazing for me. Hopefully that will be amazing for me to hear from how they dealt with it. What did they do?
Yeah.
What worked for them? What didn't work for them? And the same way I can maybe help other people and tell them about something that I've dealt with. So that sort of perspective and learning from other people in the group, I hope will be really valuable.
Yeah, that's great to hear about the way you're approaching this problem, is that getting your customers in a room and talking to them is something we recommend all the time. Everyone comes to us saying, let's build this cool thing. And we're like, no, find the people who you want to interact with and just listen to what they have to say.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, essentially a lot of what this product will be anyway.
But it will, yeah. I mean, it's been quite interesting, actually, because I suppose in the last 3 years, it's always been about tech, apps, chatbots, you know, big data. Like, it's always been very technical. And actually, with this, I wasn't convinced, and I'm not convinced, that the solutions to these problems will be technical. I think they actually may be, you know, real, physical, and offline, and community-based. Because at the end of the day, if you're feeling down or whatever, and you're going through some sort of mental struggle, whether it's quite severe and it's depression, or whether it's just I've had a bit of a shitty day, the answer usually is to talk to someone.
Yeah, completely.
And and that's what I really wanted to do, just put people in a room together. So, and as well, you know, from a product perspective, I'm going to know in that first session how it's going. Like, you're going to feel the feedback and you're going to be able to feel if it's working. So should be quite interesting. And it sort of makes a change from email signups and, downloads.
Very different thing
and
to do.
It's very different, So
what's the kind of next step after that? How are you looking to grow this? Kind of, what's your roadmap, I want to call it? But I suppose it doesn't really have the same...
I see those sessions as the product, really. And I think you can apply that same lean methodology, lean startup methodology to it. You know, just before, I've not built anything. All I've done is I've got an email address and a Medium account, and I've promoted the session over Medium, and I've written a few posts about it and used that organic audience that I've got.
Yeah, I suppose it helps that you have those links already so you can reach out to a bunch of these people.
Exactly. But... And, you know, to do the sign up, I'm going to create an Eventbrite page. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to be really creative with the solution, with the products that are out there to validate my product.
Yeah.
And I actually think that's something that startups don't do enough in general.
Yeah.
You know, you can really validate a lot of your assumptions with a Facebook page or a WhatsApp channel or a newsletter. Like, there's so much you can do now.
We tell people this all the time.
Exactly.
It's good when people buy into it, but you often find they haven't quite bought into it.
You know what it is? If they don't, it's really lazy, I think.
Yeah.
They obviously don't want it enough would be my my thinking. And because there's so much you can do, it is not hard to, you know, for my first session, I'm creating an Eventbrite page. Like, it's really not very difficult.
Yeah.
And actually, that's going to validate everything I need to know. Will people pay? Will they turn up to the location? Do they think the structure's good?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to do all I need.
Yeah.
Okay, at some point, hopefully, I'll need, you know, a decent website which can take bookings and whatever. But right now, it's just so unnecessary.
Completely, yeah.
So I suppose for me, in terms of roadmap, I'm really just trying to focus on that first session and mm-hmm. not get too carried away.
Yeah.
I've not even done a session yet. You know, I've got no idea how it's going to go. I've pretty much got it filled out already, which is cool. Awesome. And I've got the structure sorted.
Yeah.
And I've got the location and the venue sorted as well. So I just want to get that first session done and really see how that goes. Mm-hmm. And then speak to my customers, speak to the 8 people who've come to the session, ask them how it went.
What could be better,
and then iterate from there, really, and put on another session. But even in the process, I mean, I've learned so much even trying to get people to that session.
Yeah.
I was very naive and massively underestimated how difficult it is to get 8 people in a room.
No,
at one time. It's really hard. and then get them to pay to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then get them to open up about some of their deepest, darkest fears. That's really hard.
Definitely.
Straight away, you know, oh, I can't make it. I'm on holiday. I can't make it. I've got plans. I don't feel comfortable.
Mm.
You know, all this feedback, even from just trying it. So it's been an incredible learning experience already.
So how have you reached out to people? What have been the ways you've done that?
I've obviously been pretty fortunate in the sense that my role previously was to speak to founders. So my network of entrepreneurs is pretty strong anyway. And to be honest with you, a lot of it's been pretty organic as well. Mm. Like I said, when I wrote those, I wrote my own posts, which went viral. I wrote a post in The Guardian as a result.
Oh, cool.
So I've had a lot of inbound. You know, I've had a lot of people reach out to me anyway. Like I said, 300 emails. Mm. And I already had a pretty big list of people I could go and speak to.
Yeah.
And basically, I started off just doing customer development with those guys. I didn't pitch the idea of a class. I just went and asked them as many open-ended and unbiased questions as I could fathom about what kind of struggles they've had, what they have done to cope, what the problems were. And then eventually, I just said, right, after everything you've told me, like, this is what I'm thinking. Yeah, this is my idea.
Sounds like you might want this. How about it?
Yeah, and that was, I mean, that is, so I tried to do, you know, I definitely didn't do it perfectly, but I tried to do your classic Rob Fitzpatrick, the mum test, customer development. That was the aim.
It gets mentioned every time.
Yes, so, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yet again. and at the moment, it's just you doing this, right? It's just a solo effort.
Just me. I've because I was running the angel syndicate before. A lot of my friends are sort of angel investors, so I've managed to get a bit of sort of funding just for me personally to run at this, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Which is, I'm very lucky and grateful to get. So it's just me for now.
Well,
and I plan on keeping it as lean as possible, really.
Until you have to expand, yeah.
Yeah, I don't need anyone else, really.
Yeah,
it's just me. And then as long as I create these sessions so that I've got someone to talk to,
It's interesting to see how that can work in a kind of, I mean, we deal with products and building tech, and we're always saying to people, why build something when you don't know people want it? You know, what you're building when you don't even know what it is that people want?
Yeah.
But to do it in the same way you're doing, where you're not making an actual kind of physical product, but still getting it to the same way. It's interesting to see the kind of parallels between the two worlds.
I think there's loads of parallels.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of the day, whether it's a sandwich shop or a, you know, consumer mobile app or a chatbot or enterprise software as a service, you know, you're really trying to find something that people are going to pay money for and that's going to add value to them and it's going to solve a problem for them. And the parallels in doing that are much the same. You're really looking for that pull, you know, that real engagement from users and obvious signs of love. Like, it sounds again really cheesy, but you're looking in 3 years at Matcha, we never had one email of this is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Or when's the next update? I love what you guys are doing. We didn't have one, even an ounce of that. And I wrote one article on this topic and I got 300 of those emails.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, and when your session's done next week, you could have loads of that kind of feedback as well.
Yeah, and, you know, to have eight people actually in a room, actually talking is, you know, that for me will be a bit of validation if that happens, and touch wood, it will.
Mm.
But that's really what anyone starting a business should be looking for. You know, you're really looking for people who champion what you're doing.
Yeah.
So however you do that may be slightly different. It might be a Facebook page for some people. In my case, it was Medium articles and loads of tweets. But that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And I think there's plenty of ways you can get that and sort of start to get a bit of validation of that without building anything, without spending a penny as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and going back as well to when you started out, having a vision for something you care about now as well.
Yeah, so exactly. That's obviously the you can't really do anything without that, to be honest with you.
Cool. So that all sounds awesome. Thanks for coming in to talk about it.
Cheers.
We wish you all the best. I'm going to definitely keep my eye open on it and follow up with you in the future, see how things are going. Would love to keep in touch with you. So why don't you tell everyone where they can find you online?
Yeah. So currently the sort of site, again, like I said, I haven't spent any money, very happy. to just follow all the posts about what I'm up to is mentalhealthandstartups.com.
Mm-hmm.
So fairly easy to remember. And then obviously on Twitter, I'm constantly, you know, pushing out stuff, and that my handle's JD_Routledge. And through that, you can find my newsletter. So I do a weekly newsletter, which is about my journey with this company, but also I curate a lot of reading around personal development and mental health. And that's been growing quite nicely, actually.
Awesome.
So yeah, sign up to that if you can.
We will be. That's great. Thanks again. This has been the Lighthouse Podcast. Thanks for listening. You can find us at wearelighthouse.com. Lots more blog posts and podcasts up there. Tune in next time for another startup story or another episode from our team. Follow us on at We Are Lighthouse. Cheers for listening, everyone, and thanks for coming in, James.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.